we're not the experts in the thing we're making training on. We are relying on the subject matter experts in the company to give us the information, and then we turn it into a course. And I'm always having to push them on this question of what is the behavior you're trying to change? Because they always go back to the knowledge, they always go back to something big picture, and just the more discreet you can make it, the more effective it's going to be, and honestly, the simpler it's going to be. If you use that behavior lens of what behavior you're trying to change and keep pushing on that, you'd be amazed at just how simple the changes can be.
Welcome to Management Development Unlocked, where you will learn how to nurture a world-class management team. And now your host, Eric Girard.
Welcome back to Management Development Unlocked. I am overjoyed that you're here. Please remember to subscribe. I am thrilled to announce that according to last week's analytics, we have over 3,200 downloads and 1,400 listeners. And that's a week old, so I need to look in and see what's new these days. Today, I am delighted to have Matt Gjertsen with me. Matt, welcome to the show. You have an amazing background, and we have the Talent Development Think Tank and Bob Gentle in common. So please tell us,
right,
who are you and what do you do?
Hi, my name is Matt Gjertsen. I am super excited to be here and to be talking to your audience. I am the founder of a company called Better Everyday Studios that is a company looking to transform how companies view talent development by building custom training solutions that deliver business results for organizations. Yeah, I don't know how deeply you want to go into my background. We've known each other for a few months now through the Talent Development Think Tank. I got started in training from I was an instructor pilot in the U.S. Air Force. That eventually took me to SpaceX after I left the Air Force, and then after working at another startup, I decided to start my own company. My career has been interesting in that I just keep working with smaller and smaller organizations. I start at like 300,000 in the Air Force, and 7,000 at SpaceX, and then it was like 1,500, and now two people.
Okay. I got to ask, what was it like flying and teaching for the Air Force and later working for SpaceX?
Flying and teaching in the Air Force was amazing. It's definitely the foundation of everything that I think about training because, you know, training, the military is the military because of training. Like if we do anything, it's that we, if we do anything well, we do training well. So I actually, you know, they have formal instructor schools. So after I learned how to fly, I then went to an instructor school where for 4 months, all we did was learn how to teach flying in the plane that we already knew how to flew. It was a very high stakes situation, you know, when you're teaching people how to fly planes. Lots of stories of you know, students almost flying us into the ground or flying us into another airplane. But I think the thing that it taught me is that it formed my basis for kind of a behavior-based approach to learning, because I think of training from a very practical perspective, because that's how I learned it. And I think I took that to when I went to SpaceX, because, I mean, SpaceX isn't necessarily known as, you know, doing traditional learning and development. They have more of a learning style that is very much learned by doing, you know, hence their, you know, test, fail, succeed kind of approach to things. And so it's again, a very practical approach to training where you're looking at what are we trying to achieve? What's the best way to achieve it? So all those experiences really are kind of the foundation of how I think about training and development.
That's amazing. You're the first person I talked to with that particular mix of things, and I can only imagine the stories you could tell. So maybe we'll get into some of those stories. Maybe we'll weave those in as we go.
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. Okay. Well, I want to ask a question that you have kind of alluded to that's probably got people wondering, so what is this thing? So the first question I've got is foundational. What is behavior-based training? And if you could kind of elaborate on that for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, most people who, you know, and I know a lot of your listeners are managers, maybe not familiar with traditional ways of like looking at learning. But when you look at learning design and especially learning evaluation, there's generally four different levels that people look at. You start off with kind of the engagement of the training? You know, do you like the course? Is the room temperature good enough? Was the presenter like exciting enough? That's usually considered level one in what's called the Kirkpatrick scales. So level one is kind of the engagement piece. Level two is the knowledge piece, where you're looking at like, did people learn through the engagement that they just took part in? Did they learn any facts? Can they take a quiz? Can they pass a test? Level three is behavior. What are people actually doing after the course? And then level four is impact. What are the changes that are happening out in the business? And good training, the ultimate goal is always to have an impact on the business. But I think, you know, when it comes to how do we operationalize that? How do we make that impact into something that we can actually do and perform day to day? It always comes back to behaviors. What are the things that people are doing? You know, I mean, and again, you know, to bring in a story from my time flying, I remember one of my final times flying in the KC-10. So the KC-10 was the main aircraft that I flew when I was in the US Air Force. It's this giant refueling plane. Like, maximum gross weight is 595,000 pounds. Like, it's an absolute beast of an aircraft. And towards the end of my time as instructor, I went up flying with someone, another pilot, who she had flown the KC-10 for a few years and then had transferred to a different aircraft, a King Air, which is a small dual engine prop plane, you know, like an order of magnitude smaller than the KC-10. And so she had done, you know, a couple deployments flying that, and now she was back in the KC-10. And I was teaching her we're working on landings, and she, when you practice landings in any airplane, you're in what's called the pattern, where you land, you take off immediately after takeoff, you turn the aircraft and kind of fly in this oval around the airport. So you take off, you turn, you level off about 1,500 feet above the ground, and then as soon as you get there, you start a descending turn to land again. It's called the pattern, and so it allows you to do just takeoffs and landings, takeoffs and landings again and again. And when you're making the turn to land, it's called the perch, where you basically have to pull back the power, lower the nose, and turn the wings so that you're perching to get yourself aligned with the runway. And she was totally messing this up. She was just, you know, it was basically the change from a small prop plane to a giant jet aircraft, and just her feel for the proper movements in the plane was all off. And in one respect, it's easy to look big picture at that and be like, the impact that we're trying to have is to land the plane properly, right? Like, that's what we're trying to do. But lots of things have to happen in order to land the plane. And the key thing that she was doing wrong was just one simple movement. Because when you perch the aircraft, it's a coordinated movement between one hand that's on the yoke of the plane and the other hand that is on the throttle of the plane. So it's this coordinated movement of pulling back the throttles and turning the yoke at a very specific rate. And because of the change in aircraft, that coordination just wasn't there. It was just this simple movement of both hands that she was getting wrong. And so kind of in real time, I had to think through, like, okay, what's a way that I can have her practice just this one little behavior? Because that is the key behavior that needs to be changed in order for all of this to work out. And so we went through a couple practice runs, and then eventually she landed the plane well. She started to get it. And so I think behavior-based training is really that. It's what is the key behavior, the key movement that is going to cause all of this bigger change to happen? Or what's the one behavior that's limiting this person in this whole aspect of what they are trying to do? So I know that was kind of a long story, but that is how I would describe behavior-based training.
No, I don't think this story was too long at all. And in fact, I want more stories like that. Because I think that you know, telling a good story and helping a listener put themselves in the seat in the plane next to you and understanding, okay, with my left hand I'm doing this with the yoke, and with my right hand I'm doing this with the throttles, plural, and, you know, trying to get just that little movement, that little jog that gets the plane turned right. I think that's a direct analogy to management training. You know,
yes.
What are the questions you ask during a good coaching session that gets the coachee to go, aha, I have the answer to this?
Yeah.
Or what do you say during a feedback session where, you know, you are both completely honest and completely candid and also completely kind at the same time. It's a behavior. It's a muscle movement that you have to memorize. So no, I think that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was recently listening to an interview with Alex Hormozi on the Impact Theory podcast, on Tom Bilyeu's Impact Theory podcast. And I wanted to just like record, there's this one segment where there's this like 5 minute segment where I just wanted to record the whole thing and broadcast it to the world, because this is exactly what he was harping on from a business perspective of whether it's management, whether it's sales, whether it's, you know, whatever it is. Everything boils down to specific behavior, even something like culture, right? We often talk about culture as being this like big picture thing. Culture is just an accumulation of behaviors within an organization. And yeah, so you can always bring it back to that.
So just to clarify, did you say you were on a podcast with Alex Hormozi?
Oh, no. I was listening to your podcast with Alex Hormozi. That would be, you would know if I had been on a podcast with Alex Hormozi.
I was gonna say, you kept that awfully quiet. And folks who don't know who Alex Hormozi is, he's written two books that I'm trying to memorize, $100 million offers and $100 million leads, which is just what I love about it is it's such a straightforward, direct way to look at marketing and sales without being gross or spammy, which I'm scared to death of. So I love his approach.
And it's interesting, I think, about his approach because Hormozi got started in the fitness training world. He himself was a fitness trainer. He then opened a chain of gyms and then it just kind of spiraled from there. And that was actually another place that I got started. So while I was an instructor pilot, I was also really, really into triathlons and I was training other people how to run marathons. Like I ran a training course for a couple of years on the base I was at to coach people to run their first marathon in the Oklahoma City Marathon. And this, you know, physical fitness coaching is exactly the same way in that it's very, very specific on doing these key behaviors to get specific outcomes. And so I think it makes sense that given Alex Hormozi's background, he kind of takes that same direct approach into business when he's thinking about how do we improve business.
Yeah. And I can see parallels into scuba diving. All my listeners know I love scuba diving. When I'm teaching people how to dive, you know, it's the accumulation of a number of small skills, behaviors, movements that lead to you being able to successfully scuba dive and explore something and come back. So yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's dive deeper into the difference between behavior-based training, which you've explained really well, and what we call normal training or coaching, what you would call normal training or coaching. So what's the difference between behavior-based training and, quote, normal training or coaching?
Well, I think there's a couple ways I can think about this. I mean, I do think that most people, when they think about training, they default to everyone's common denominator, which is school. You know, anytime you're talking about changing behavior or changing performance or learning, you think about school. And so we model that. We model the sage on the stage. We model the instructor, giving a lecture. We model knowledge transfer. That is far, you know, and that's just different. Again, you know, going back to the Kirkpatrick four levels, that's the level two where it's just like the information's there. But I always love the Tony Robbins quote of knowledge isn't power, knowledge is potential power. And it doesn't actually become powerful until you put it to use behaviorally. And so I think that's the first respect that I think most people make a mistake at is thinking about the knowledge rather than the behavior. But then even once you tie it into the behavior, a really big influencer of mine was a researcher named Anders Ericsson, who's a psychologist, wrote the book Peak. It's kind of like the science of peak performance is kind of his background. And he describes, even if you're focusing on behaviors and practicing behaviors, I love his research because he takes practice and breaks it into three different realms or three different types of practice of naive practice, purposeful practice, and deliberate practice. And what most people do is that naive practice where you kind of have this broader, you have a general sense of, oh, I want to get better at having a difficult conversation. I want to get better at giving presentations. I want to get better at communicating with my team. But you don't necessarily clearly identify the things you want to get better at within that, or have a clear plan for getting better at them. And the example that Anders Ericsson actually uses in his book is tennis. You know, again, going back to kind of like a physical sport where most people practice tennis by just like going to the court every Sunday and playing for a couple hours. Whereas if you want to get better, you know, if you want to get better, what you're going to do is you're going to say, okay, I'm going to go this Sunday and just practice my backhand for 2 hours. And like, that's all I'm going to do. So you get very specific at the one behavior you're trying to focus on. That would be purposeful practice. And then the thing that makes it deliberate practice is you go to the next level and you have a coach, where a coach has a clear plan of action for you that you know will get you the outcome that you want to achieve. So that's when it comes to behavior-based training, that understanding that difference between naive practice, purposeful practice, and deliberate practice, I think is another really key element for any manager. Anytime you're looking at kind of like coaching your team, whether you're making yourself better or your team better, understanding that I think is really essential.
Yeah, and I can see so many parallels to the management development world.
Yeah.
You know, it's the whole idea of, you know, showing up. I remember my first gig as a manager in Silicon Valley, my manager and I were having a conversation, and he said that I was sweetly naive when it came to you know, managing my team.
Yeah.
And that wasn't a compliment. That was definitely not where I wanted to be. But, you know, it certainly indicated that I had room to grow, which was important, and I took it seriously. So, yeah.
Yep.
Nice. Well, let's tie this back to managers, the folks listening to this show. What are some examples of how managers could apply behavior-based training with their team?
I think the most important thing is when you're thinking about developing your team, it can be a lot simpler and easier than you think it is. You know, very often people get nervous when we bring up the idea of coaching or mentoring, or, you know, we need to improve the performance of the people on our team. And, oh, I don't know how to have those conversations. I'm not sure what to do. And what thinking of things through a behavior lens does is it can make it really, really simple. And you don't have to have all the answers right from the beginning. If somebody on your team is really nervous about public speaking, well, then what's just one thing that they can do to improve? If they say a lot of ums and uhs and they're stuttering a lot, then say, okay, that's it. Right? Like, that's the one behavior that you're going to focus on and come up with a plan of action. You're going to say, okay, so here's what we're going to do. At the weekly team meeting, we're going to make sure each week you're presenting on a topic, and I'm just going to keep track of this one thing. I don't care about anything else. I'm just going to kind of keep track of the ums and uhs that you're saying. And then after every meeting, we'll debrief, because that's another key element of this, is giving that feedback. And so I often say that if I ever write a book, the book's going to be called Lower the Bar, because I think that's what this is all about. Any change you need to get momentum going if you want to change people's behavior. And so starting with the smallest change possible is really key. And so, you know, again, to that example, it can seem really daunting of, oh, they want to improve public speaking. I'm not a public speaking coach. I've not done a lot of public speaking in my life. But that's fine. You can still watch them and make a judgment of what are a few of the things that they can improve. Or if you don't know, ask them what is one thing that you think you can improve, and keep pushing them. Because this is something that I have to do a lot with subject matter experts, because my company, we make custom training for organizations. So we're not the experts in the thing we're making training on. We are relying on the subject matter experts in the company to give us the information, and then we turn it into a course. And I'm always having to push them on this question of what is the behavior you're trying to change? Because they always go back to the knowledge. They always go back to something big picture. And just the more discreet you can make it, the more effective it's going to be, and honestly, the simpler it's going to be. If you use that behavior lens of what behavior you're trying to change and keep pushing on that, you'd be amazed at just how simple the changes can be.
You know, I love that, and it reminds me of a recent client engagement I had where the client came to me and said, "This is the thing my managers are not doing well," and she was able to pinpoint, like, "This is the behavior I really want to focus on." And oh, by the way, blah, 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 blah. And she kind of ran down this other list of stuff. And I'm like, okay, you know what? That helps my data collection efforts greatly, because now I know what follow-up questions to ask you. And it also gives me a little placeholder in my head that says, yes, I think I can solve this with something without having to customize too much, you know, which is nice. That saves the client money and it makes things go faster. So yeah, makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And I think another way managers can do it, even if it's not, you know, kind of attacking it from the other side of, if you're not sure of this poor performer and wanting them to improve, look at the difference, look at your top performance and just kind of identify what are the things that they're doing that other people aren't doing. Okay, now how do we transfer that behavior? How do we get the other people to do it? So if you're not sure what to focus on, I think that's another great place to start.
Yeah, that's great. I talk about the performance gap when I teach folks coaching. You know, when you're trying to decide what to coach on, get clear on what the delta is between desired performance and current performance. And there's your gap and there's what you focus on.
Exactly. And I think when you're looking at that gap, one key thing that I think is really important to understand too is how big that gap is and what that means for behavior. Because, you know, so when it comes to behavior and the way we act in the world, most of our actions are relatively unconscious, right? We have these mental models in our brain for how to open a door, how to drive the car, you know, all that kind of stuff. And the more skilled you get, the bigger, you know, if we talk about behavior and what's a discrete behavior, the more skilled you get, the bigger a single behavior is, right? Like when you're first starting, you know, riding your bike, there's lots of skills you need to learn, lots of behaviors you need. You need to figure out how to turn the pedals, how to steer the wheel, how to keep your balance, how to look in front of you and figure out where you're going to go. And when you're first starting out, like the reason why it's so hard to start riding a bike is because you're kind of trying to learn all of those things at the same time, and they're very discrete different skills. And that's why actually, if anybody's ever seen most kids today learning a bike, actually don't learn using training wheels anymore. They learn with these bikes. I think they're called like Strider bikes.
Strider bikes. Where, both my kids had one.
Exactly. Where they don't have the pedals attached. Mm-hmm. And you're just pushing yourself forward. And so using their feet on the ground is something that kids already know how to do. And so you kind of remove that skill as a requirement for being on the bike. And all you're focusing on is the balance. So you're kind of isolating it to one skill. So the kind of this point of the story is, right, like when you're first starting out how to ride a bike, there's all these different things that are discrete skills. As you get better and better, riding a bike just becomes one behavior, right? Like once you know how to ride a bike, you jump on, you're not thinking about each one of those individual actions, you're just riding a bike. And so how does that transfer into management? Well, if you're looking at high skill and low skill or experienced and new people on your team, it can sometimes be difficult because if somebody is really highly skilled compared to the other person, one skill for them or one behavior for them is five or six behaviors for this less experienced person. And so as a manager, I think it's really important to think through that. Actually, it was actually really funny. I was unwittingly a participant in an experiment, in a psychological experiment when I was at the Air Force Academy that kind of tested this theory, where at the Air Force Academy, after freshman year, the Air Force Academy is divided up into 36 different squadrons. I think it's 40 now, but when I was there, it was 36 different squadrons. And you're in one squadron your freshman year, and then your whole class, your freshman class from your squadron, is broken up and sent to all the different squadrons. And so for a few years, what they did is they didn't make that selection random. They deliberately put people in different squadrons based on a combination of their GPA and their military performance record and that kind of stuff, in an attempt to test, like, if we put a bunch of high performers with a bunch of low performers, will they pull up the low performers, or will the low performers pull down the high performers? And what they found is that, let's use a grading scale of A, B, C, D, for example. If you put a bunch of A students with a bunch of B or C students, then the tendency is the B and C students get pulled up towards the A students. Mm-hmm. But if you put a bunch of A students in with a bunch of D and F students, then they actually split apart. And the gap between their behaviors is too wide for them to like even make a connection between the two groups. And you don't see that pulling. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a really good example of this idea of when you're looking at high and low performers, you just have to be careful that if that gap is really wide, you're going to have to do additional work to break down those skills. So it's something that the new or the inexperienced person can actually absorb.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. That's cool. Well, I'm sorry that you were a guinea pig, but thank you for reporting out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about you. Do you have a product or a service or a company you'd like to talk about?
I mean, so Better Video Studios, yeah. I mean, our main focus, 2024 is actually a great year for us because so historically we have been focused on instructional design, which is will always be a focus of ours, where it's just, you know, for companies that need instructional design services, we're providing additional support. But this year we've actually created a number of products around those. The first product that we're really focusing on is hiring and interview training. Because I think, you know, for myself, when I was first made a manager, I was never trained how to interview. I know a lot of companies that don't do it, yet it is a really, really pivotal part of the whole talent process inside any organization. And so for anybody out there who thinks their teams could use a little bit of work in this kind of focus, we have a two-part system that first talks to hiring managers specifically of how to write good job descriptions, how to create the questions for a structured interview, how to onboard employees into your team, and then a separate program just for interviewers so that even if you're not a hiring manager, that covers, you know, how to ask good questions, how to mitigate bias, that kind of stuff. It's really interesting in the research for creating this. I've talked to, you know, I've been lucky enough to be exposed to a lot of amazing recruiters, whether it was at SpaceX or other tech startups around the LA area. And so I went and interviewed a whole bunch of them. And in the process, I came across this concept of structured interviews, which is basically the process of where, you know, you make sure you ask the same questions to every candidate, that those questions are directly tied to the job description, to the requirements of the role. And there's research going back to the 1980s that says structured interviews are 9 times more effective at getting the right fit for the, you know, job candidate fit. You know, decreases the time to hire, it decreases the new hire turnover, decreases the ramps time for these candidates. So that's something that I'm really excited about. We're working with one client right now, and it's going to be a big push for us in the rest of this year.
Right on. That sounds good. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of structured or behavior-based interviews. So
absolutely.
You got my vote for sure.
Awesome.
Awesome. Cool. Well, Matt, thank you so much. That was a really cool conversation. I really enjoyed it. How can people find you?
Number one place you can always find me is on LinkedIn. I'm really active there. I would love to connect with everybody. I think there's many Matt Jurtsons on LinkedIn, so it should be pretty easy to find me. And then our website is bettereverydaystudios.com, so you can go there, reach out. Yeah, anybody out there that's looking to improve the performance of yourself, your team, your organization, love to chat with you because it's a huge passion of mine. And then, of course, I also have a podcast that you are on called the Making Better Podcast, and so you can check me out there.
Cool. Okay. Well, thanks for listening. Please subscribe to this show and Matt's and connect with us both on LinkedIn. You can pick up my new book, Lead Like a Pro, The Essential Guide for New Managers on Amazon. We will catch you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Later, everybody.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Management Development Unlocked. Want more? Get a ton of insider tips and tools at GerardTrainingSolutions.com.